Welcome to the Buckmaster Show and happy Monday. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sawarita Sun, along with producer Ed Alexander. Bill is finishing up his vacation in Hawaii, and he's been posting some terrific photos on his Facebook page.
Nice one from Hana. That was good.
Just type in his name and you'll find the page. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2015. Bill is here live each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. We live stream the show at KVOI.com, and you can get podcasts and archives of all the Buckmaster shows at buckmastershow.com. Let's give the Buckmaster Show's media partners a shout out. They are TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, the Sawarita Sun, and TucsonLifestyle.com, and you'll find links to the Buckmaster Show on their home pages. We always start out the week with the Monday Political Face-Off, featuring the big issues on the political scene. And then at half past the hour today, we'll be talking to Eric Holton, music director of Tucson Chamber Artists, about some changes coming their way this summer. But for now, let's head into the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and of course, on Facebook. Today's Political Face-Off features commentators Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. Bruce is a Republican National Committeeman for Arizona. Paul is the former chairman of the state and county Democrats. And if you'd like to join the discussion, you can call the KVOI live line at 790-2040. That is 790-2040. Welcome, gentlemen. It was a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, mid-70s. I loved it. Yeah, you keep that summer at bay a little bit.
Yeah,
arm's length.
Say goodbye. I tell you, Saturday, big day in Green Valley. We have the Green Valley Hospital opening later this month, and they had one day of public tours. I don't know what they expected, but they had 3,500 people show up.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. If they had done this 2 months ago, it would have been double that. I can guarantee
you. Well,
all
that's a great day for Green Valley.
It is a huge day for Green Valley. And I tell you what, I went on one of the tours, and they're asking some good questions. So we're looking forward to our new hospital opening up later this month or early June. They still don't have a date yet. But it's happening. That's what matters. So.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and get into the political face-off. Bruce, I want to take you back 2 weeks ago on this show with Bill. You had some pretty strong words for what you called the decades of Democratic leadership that you say led to a lot of the problems that we see in places like Baltimore. And we talked a bit about this last week with Jeff Rogers and John Munger. If we can all agree that a lack of economic opportunity is hurting areas like Baltimore, how big a factor is that going to be in the presidential election? And has President Obama failed in this area?
I believe that not only President Obama has failed in this area, but probably every president since Lyndon Johnson. We've spent nearly $17 trillion on the war against poverty, and I think poverty's winning. So it's not just Democrats, Dan. It's also Republicans. This is not only an economic issue. It's a cultural issue. It is a interfamily issue, as well as an educational issue. And the thing that I tried to talk about in my radio piece a couple of weeks ago was that, unfortunately, just about the only minority group who has largely failed to make it out of the inner city ghetto sort of setting have been African Americans. And I really do believe that some of the greatest obstacles to them have been their own leaders, whether it was Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, and many of the members of Congress who have really planned their political business around keeping their constituencies in place. And a far better solution would be to help lift those populations out of the poverty and the lack of education and the social problems that exist in those communities, and take a chance, you know, that what's better is how few people are on welfare, as opposed to measuring one's success to the number of people who are on welfare.
Paul, does anybody really care about these people?
Well, I do. I mean, and a lot of people do, I think, at least among the progressives. You know, I was raised a Lutheran minister's kid, and I out of my religion, I have made my move towards working at least on the Democratic side of the ledger, because I view Democrats as trying to help poor people more than the Republicans. But that being said, I think Bruce is right. There's some long-term trends that have created a lot of these situations. With the African-American community, I don't think you can underemphasize the fact that they've got bigger obstacles, because, you know, there still is at least subconscious and subtle racism in the country that we're still trying to overcome. We've come a long way, but we still got a ways to go. But there is long-term trends in this country that are hurting the middle class, people who are poor, and people who are in the middle class, as concentration of wealth is rapidly happening. It's even higher now in terms of the concentration of wealth in this country than there was at the turn of the last century, when we talk about the Gilded Age. And so, you know, until I think, you know, we also have the technological revolution that's taken away some of the manufacturing jobs and things like that, that a lot of people could make it without a good education. And I think the great equalizer to fight back and make sure that we have a good distribution of wealth in this country to everybody is education. And I think we've been eroding our public education system for a long time. It's now very expensive to go to even to our public universities now. And a lot of people, a good education is out of reach. And that education is key with this new technological world we lived in terms of our economic base, to get a good paying job. And so if we want real equal opportunity in this country, and make sure that everybody, the middle class, is growing rather than shrinking, that's happening right now. The only way we really can do that is fund our public schools well, fund our public universities well, so that people who are poor have a real chance of getting a college education, because that's the ladder out of poverty, ultimately, that can create a more equitable economy that we don't have right now. And so, you know, I'm a big advocate of education and public education because of that, because I think that's the key. That's the one role of government that government has that really can unlock people's abilities to be able to have a good paying job. And therefore, then our middle class is growing, which is very important for our economic health on top of that, because if we don't have a strong middle class, our consumer-driven economy, nobody's going to be able to buy the products that are being produced.
Okay,
that's I think the key in our future. And these are long-term trends that we're talking about, as Bruce alluded to. And so I agree. We may have different opinions about how to solve those trends and change them, but.
We're going to get to education in a moment, but I want to go back to his point about leadership. I have yet to meet one African American who says that Al Sharpton speaks for them. Is he the best they can do?
Well, you know, frankly, I'm a white guy, so it's not for me to determine who an African American leader should be.
I disagree with you. But we can look at Al Sharpton and say that he is not serving. He's not serving the good of those people. I think we can make that blanket statement.
Well,
don't you?
It depends on the issue and what he says at a particular time, because I've seen Al Sharpton say some really good things, and I think, I suppose, like every leader, he's got his blind spots. I believe,
like not paying taxes.
What I really believe is, it's not just about the African American community. It's about our entire society right now, and what's happening to the middle class and poor people in this country. And until we start to solve some of those problems and their long-term solutions, generational solutions, and difficult problems to deal with, until we solve the equity in our economic system issue, where we have more people growing in the middle class than shrinking the middle class, we're never going to get to where we want to go in terms of a society.
No, and he does have a good point. It's not their problem, it's our problem. And would you agree with that?
Of course, it's everybody's problem. But when you have leaders such as Congressman Grijalva and Gallegos, who in anticipation of this upcoming Supreme Court ruling that would sort of reorganize redistricting here in Arizona, are doing everything possible to solidify and to make their districts safer for them, even if it's at the expense of District 9 Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema. They don't care. And this is exactly the problem that we've seen that has led to these long-term packing of minority voters. Frankly, it is an awful kind of a situation. And it's not just Congress. I mean, we see this, you know, throughout governance, whether it's city governments or county governments and state governments and so on. Fortunately, something like 31 out of the 50 states are being run by Republican governors at this time and pretty much for the last decade. And we've seen tremendous success lifting all parts of the economy. To listen to Paul Eckerstrom, you would think that there's absolutely zero middle class here in this country.
It's shrinking.
You've been on a filibuster for the last 10 minutes. Just listen for 2 seconds. If you listen to Paul Eckerstrom, you would think that the only way to solve these is to give just a little bit more money to the government in order to let them make the decisions. Well, you know what? I think those decisions are made very well by state governments, by county governments, and by individuals as well in terms of how they run their businesses and how they run their families.
Bruce, yes or no, is the middle class shrinking?
No, it's growing all the time.
Okay.
Unfortunately, not at nearly a fast enough pace when you look at the economy having only gone up by about 1-2% over the last several years.
But when you look at those factory jobs that used to feed the middle class and you realize that tens of thousands of those have been wiped out over the last couple of decades, you cannot possibly say that the middle class is thriving or growing.
No, the middle class is as large as it's been on a percentage basis. Unfortunately, the labor participation in this country is way, 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 way down. It's probably at about a 35 or 40-year low. And these are huge problems that we must overcome. There are tons of people, Dan, as you know, that have left the job force completely. They've frustrated themselves looking for a job.
To jump in on that, there's some issues here that are long-term economic issues that I'm not sure we know what the solution is. I mean, for example, technology, robots are taking the place of a lot of those manufacturing jobs. What do we do with those people then who are out of a job? How do they then participate in this economy? And I believe the one ladder out of that situation and poverty is education. I think that's important because to build those robots, somebody needs to build the robots, but you have to have a pretty good education to do it.
Okay, we are going to take a break here. You are listening to The Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer filling in for Bill, and we are with Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom right in the middle of the Monday political face-off, and we'll be back in a moment.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering its promises, completing 149 out of 200 intersection improvements, 48 of 80 pedestrian safety crossings, 108 of 200 bus pullouts, and 226 miles of 500 promised bike lanes. Since the 2006 voter approval of the RTA plan, some 650 projects are completed. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amato is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Viral Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. and now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and of course, on Facebook. We are with Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom, and as always, if you'd like to join the discussion, you can call the KVOI live line at 790-2040. We're talking about politics. Let's move on to a story that was in yesterday's Arizona Daily Star. It's about a survey about Pima Community College students. It says 87% of high school graduates coming into their system are deficient in reading, writing, or math. Paul, are you surprised at the numbers?
You know, I'm not that surprised. I'm a public defender by trade, and I see a lot of people going to prison who don't have a good education. And you know, and also a lot of this, you know, I can say basically we've defunded our public schools, and that's part of the problem. And I can say that that we need to fund them better. The problem is, though, we have a breakdown in the family going on as well, and I can attribute that again to the economic stress that's been placed on a lot of people who are in the middle class or lower in the poor ranks. And so there's solutions there we need to deal with societally, because a good student, if they have good parents mentoring them, the student's going to be doing well in school. But the other thing I wanted to point out is we have a right now a legislature and a governor in this state that would have – they had budget priorities in terms of a budget deficit. And their budget priorities were we aren't going to touch wealthy tax breaks and tax breaks for big corporations. We aren't going to touch the prison system. We're actually going to increase the prison system and beds available in the prison system. And we're going to slash education. In other words, we don't want to educate our kids, but we want to send them and incarcerate them in our prison system. And those priorities are way out of whack of what we should be doing. And is funding schools the ultimate solution? It's part of the solution. It's not the entire solution. But we getting a good job for people so that they can be good parents to their kids, that's part of the solution. All of this kind of works together. But right now, our priorities, at least in Arizona's budget, don't reflect those principles at all. They just reflect principles of greed. That's what's going on.
Bruce, we're heading the wrong way as far as the state goes regarding education funding.
You can always do better, and I'm confident we will. The governor and the legislature have targeted increased educational expenditures next year as the economy gets a little back to be stronger. But let's look at facts. Tucson Unified School District gets the same dollars per pupil that Flowing Wells, Vail, Empire, Catalina Foothills, Vail, Sarita, Continental get, and you know, name a district. Those districts don't have failing systems. Those systems are turning out good students that know how to write, that know how to read, that understand mathematics and skills, and have fairly good job skills, either to go directly into the job market or to go into junior college or four-year college settings. It is a very stinking Tucson Unified School District run by essentially the same people for the last four decades who have run education in the Tucson area right down into the ground. And as long as these people are going to emphasize their diversity and their social issues and everything but what we should be doing, and that's emphasizing reading, writing, arithmetic skills, we're not going to see any improvement in that 87% number.
Okay, well, hold on. Let me throw this back to Bruce. What about at home? I mean, what kind of a role does that play? And you have some kids who are coming from pretty tough backgrounds. My daughter's a public school teacher, and we hear about it.
Sure. And that's also part of the problem that exists within Tucson Unified School District is we probably have more tough families that are within the inner core. But you can't say that those kinds of situations don't happen out in Flowing Wells, in Amphi, and also out east in the Vail School
District. They do, Bruce. Maybe TUSD is worse off than some of these other school districts, but all of them are not doing well in terms of producing students ready for college. And it goes directly to the fact that we are 50th in the country in per pupil spending
stop
for
it.
Kids
just
in
K through 12. You're just a one note Johnny.
No, I'm not a one note Johnny. Let me tell you something. These kids are coming from tough situations, and one of the reasons is we're incarcerating people at such a high rate in this state, and when they get out, they can't be a good parent to the kids because you know why? They can't get a job. You know why? Because nobody will hire a felon who's convicted, even if it wasn't a nonviolent situation, and we aren't putting resources into helping that person assimilate back into society, be a good parent to those kids.
I appreciate
we're not
that.
Doing that.
Okay.
Paul, Bruce. We're incarcerating these people rather than helping them.
Paul,
okay.
Bruce,
just a second. What's not happening in Tucson Unified School District especially has to do with the lack of discipline and the lack of enforcement by teachers. The classrooms are out of control. They are not.
So it's the teacher's fault.
That's what you just said.
You're not enforced by the
teachers. Stop the filibuster, Paul.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now. We have Roger on the line. And Roger, you've got a question about the middle class, I'm assuming. Go ahead.
Well, what my main focus is you hear Democrats say, we got to have more money for education in Arizona, this and that. Well, how about we produce some more money? Why don't we allow that Rosemont mine to open, generate the revenues? Grand Canyon University was down here. We threw them out. We're killing jobs. We need to create the jobs first, but we don't hear about that. And as far as being poor or whatever, my father grew up in the early 1900s on a farm during the Depression, only had an eighth grade education, went on to serve proudly in World War II, started a construction company, while he also had other jobs. He wasn't rich, but that don't mean that you end up being in jail.
Roger, you make a great point.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Thank you.
You make a great point, and that's the other thing that has stifled productivity and growth in the economy, and that is the amount of regulation and the amount of crony capitalism by both parties, Dan, that has stifled the ability to create new businesses, new industries, and whole new areas of intellectual thought.
Okay, we're gonna head back to the phones. Adriana, you have got a comment about money. You there?
Yes. Well, he always makes it about money. And to me, it's like, you know, where's the personal accountability for the students who are in school? You never talk about the students not being accountable for not learning. They're there to learn. And you can't blame the teachers. You can't blame nobody else. You can't blame, you know, the governor. It's all on the kids.
But Adriana, if learning is not a priority at home, how do you get that to the how do you get that through the student's head?
That's not no. they go to school to be inspired to learn, okay? And money doesn't do that. It's within them and the teachers to inspire them. But to you, it's always about the money, so it's almost like we should be paying students to want to learn.
Okay. Thank you. Actually, the school district wants to pay students to learn. Let's go ahead. Paul, is it all about money? Does more money mean smarter kids?
I think it's part of it, and here's why, okay? It's not the whole answer, but here's why. When you've got 40 kids in a class or 35 kids in a classroom, you lose disciplinary control. Every study shows that about what happens for teachers. They have a harder time maintaining discipline in there. If you don't pay teachers a living wage, these are professionals with master's degrees, and we're not paying them where they can support a family. Until you start giving them competitive wages, we won't get the best teachers in the classroom. Again, all the studies say good teachers make a big difference in learning. And the third thing is, and so we want the best and the brightest teaching our kids, right? But we have to pay them to be competitive to get the best and the brightest. And the third thing is, so those classroom sizes are very important. If you get the classroom size down to about 20, they say, 20 to 22, that's optimal learning situation, and teachers can give help to specific students in those situations. But if it gets up to 30, they can't. And so that costs money. Smaller classes cost money because you need to hire more teachers. Better teachers cost money because you need to be competitive in the labor force to get the best and the brightest. So yeah, money is part of this.
And okay. Tucson Unified School District only puts 47% of every dollar that is taxed into the classroom. So these public officials who run TUSD aren't interested in putting money into the classroom.
But you know what, Bruce? You always bring this down to TUSD. There's the entire state. There isn't much better than that in terms of that. And you know why?
That's wrong,
because,
Paul.
Because they don't count
state average.
They
is close
don't
to 58
count,
cents.
They don't count facilities, bus
Paul,
drivers,
they all go
librarians.
By the same count,
they don't count those.
They all
as
go by the
classroom.
Same count. Stop telling that fiction, Paul. That's a fiction.
Okay. We are going to wind it up. It's going to wrap it up for this week's Monday Political Face-Off. Always an adventure, always some really good points. And you know what? I think we all can agree that there's lots to this. It's not just money. It's just not good teachers. It's not just getting the parents involved. It's a lot, and it's our problem. So I'd like to thank Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. Good conversation. Once again, we want to thank our Political Face-Off sponsor, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and of course on Facebook. They do great work over there. When we return, we will be joined by Eric Holton, director of Tucson Chamber Artists. We'll be right back.
Business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient, it can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us. How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster as we head into our second half hour. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson, coming up over the Memorial Day weekend. It's the 20th Silver City Blues and Bikes Festival, featuring legendary blues master Taj Mahal. And for a complete listing of the many things to do, great places to stay like Bear Mountain Lodge and Georgetown Cabins, visit southwestnewmexico.org. We are now joined by Eric Holton, music director for Tucson Chamber Artists, and Mary Davis, who handles the marketing for Tucson Chamber Artists. And I can only imagine you two are going to be easier than the last half hour. Please. Okay, Eric, I am. We went to lunch a couple of months ago, and I just really was your passion for music and actually got me interested. I'm a casual music lover. My wife plays the violin, but that's about as musical as our family gets. But I love what you do, and I think it's just fascinating. So you are not only the music director of Tucson Chamber Artists, but you're also the founder. Tell us a little bit about the group, and then I want you to define a term for us, and that is, what is chamber music?
good question. That's been the big question lately. Well, thanks, Dan, for having us. Really appreciate this opportunity and getting together with you. I, too, enjoyed our lunch down in Green Valley. And we love Green Valley, by the way. It dawns on me that as I'm thinking back, I was in this very seat with Bill before we kicked off our first concert of this past season. And we were embarking on a new strategy to expand our reach. And in fact, we added 50% more concerts to the season that we just ended over last season. And I'm pleased to tell you that our box office revenues were actually up 30%.
Wow.
The season over last. So due in part certainly to that expansionary approach, but we saw growth in all of our venues this year. So we had a heck of a year. And we're going to be starting our 12th year as Tucson Chamber Artists, although I have to say that with a bit of a caveat, an asterisk, if you will. We're changing our name.
That's right. Big news this summer.
Yeah. And this goes back a number of years. I was wrapping up my grad degree. I'm a proud U of A graduate from the School of Music, and it had been my dream for some time to start a professional organization, one in which professional voices and instrumentalists come together in making music. And I saw a potential niche here in the Southern Arizona region. And so this was back in 2004. I asked a bunch of my music school buddies if they wanted to give it a shot, and we put together a concert. And I promised everybody that I would pay them $100 And when I counted all the dollars when it was done after the concerts, I could pay him 50.
Yeah, right. But, sounds like the arts. Yeah.
But they came back, and we've been doing concerts ever since. So what makes us unique is the blending of the voices and instruments, and we do masterworks of the canon with emphasis on 18th century, but we do a number of contemporary works, including commissions. And actually, we're going to be releasing an album. I don't want to jump the gun here, but we're going to be releasing an album by a late contemporary composer, Stephen Paulus. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that soon.
Sure. Okay. And go back to my original question. Briefly, what is chamber music?
Chamber music. So I mentioned we're changing our name.
Right.
And it was I who came up with Tucson Chamber Artists, because we're a professional chamber choir and orchestra. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I chamber seemed appropriate at the time. I used artists as opposed to choir or orchestra, or choir and orchestra, because I thought it was more succinct. And what we've found is that a number of people, when they encounter our name, have been confused by it. They think we perform chamber music. So to your question, chamber music, a term that we use now, is usually referring to string quartets or piano trios, woodwind quintets, very small numbers of players, sometimes involving a singer. And that's a tradition that grew out of people's homes. You know, it was a big deal in the 19th century, in particular, to have soirees with friends and amateur musicians. And then as time went by, it became a professional art form. And by the way, it's exemplified really well right here locally with Arizona Friends of Chamber Music. They put on concerts all the time with string quartets and the various variations of chamber groups.
Okay, terrific. And then you do have some changes coming this summer. What are they? And if people want to find out more about you online, where can they go?
Well, they can go to TucsonChamberArtists.org. That is our name until the end of June.
Okay.
And then starting July 1, we will be known as True Concord Voices and Orchestra, or True Concord for short. When we finally decided we were going to take the plunge and deal with the name issue, because we had, again, as I said, encountered a lot of confusion out there in the community, people thinking that we perform chamber music. We sat down, we hired a consultant, and we got stakeholders into the room, board members, other supporters, and we talked about this issue, and we pored over all kinds of literature and other things to try to be inspired to come up with a name that worked. And I actually encountered this phrase, True Concord, in a sonnet by Shakespeare. And it's Shakespeare's description of the impact that music has on the listener, its ability to elevate the human condition, if you will, even
sure.
for a few brief
sure.
moments, but to bring people together in this almost nirvana-like place that only music has the ability to do.
And Mary, you come from a journalist background, and you're doing marketing, and it has got to be a nightmare when a group that's been in a community for, you know, 10, 12 years decides to change its name. How do you get people to follow along and get it?
Well, I will tell you, I've done a number of rebranding projects in my career. Once I left the field of journalism and went into public relations and marketing, but I got to tell you, this was the most unified group I have ever worked with. As Eric mentioned, they had discussed this idea for seven, eight years, and with the impending release of this new CD that's coming and some other opportunities, it really made sense that if there's confusion locally about who this organization is and the kind of music they produce, once this CD goes national, then there's bound to be confusion at the higher level, the national level. And so it really was the inspiration for the board and the stakeholders to come together. And it was a day and a half of really locking people into a room and kind of discussing, you know, who they were as an organization. And they're really, it was really enlightening in a lot of different levels, not just from a name perspective, but they really started to understand where their, you know, opportunities from their strategic planning perspective were going to present themselves in the short and long term as well. So, but there was a lot of unity involved with this. And then we also held focus groups from Oro Valley to Green Valley with a number of their longer-term subscribers who were very vocal. Honestly, it was a gift project for somebody in my field because there was so much involvement and engagement that I think they really came out with a clear picture, and everybody really warmed to the name and to the idea. They understood, you know, there's the handful of loyalty. You know, we love the name Tucson and the name. We've been part of this for the last 12 years. We really, you know, but at the end of the day, they say, but we understand why you need to do this as an organization. And you know, it's an opportunity for a homegrown group like Tucson Chamber to really establish itself at a national level. And that there's an innate sense of pride in that.
Very good. So Tucson Chamber Artists as of July 1, True Concord. I'm Dan Scheer filling in for Bill Buckmaster, who's still on vacation, going to be through the rest of the week, and deservedly so. I'm with Eric Holton, music director for Tucson Chamber Artists, and Mary Davis. We're going to take a break and then come back and hear about some exciting stuff coming up in the next couple of months for them.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, five kids, two grandchildren, and termites. Termites is serious business. I'm telling you, talk about eating your home away, they can do it. Best call ever made, five-star. Five-star termite and pest control. A great job. They leave no mess, they're economical, and guess what? They're friendly to our environment. 886-0045.
We're five-star pest control. We know what bugs you.
Another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Rick
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 650 projects to date, including pedestrian safety crossings, intersection safety improvements, and bus pullouts, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I am Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sowetita Sun, sitting in for Bill. And we are here with Eric Holton, director of the Tucson Chamber Artists, and Mary Davis, who handles marketing for them. Going into the next couple of months, you guys are going to be pretty busy. 9/11, New York, new season coming up. Roll it out for us, Eric.
Well, I got to back up a little bit. It occurred to me, this is back in 2009, that the community had an opportunity to mark a solemn occasion, and that is the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 tragedies. And I thought, what better way to mark an occasion like that than with music? So the idea I had was to do a concert that featured Mozart Requiem, which was performed on the one-year anniversary of 9/11 all over the world. And then to commission a new piece, a piece by a leading composer in the United States, Stephen Paulus. And the piece would be, well, whereas the Requiem would be looking back and remembering the lost and those who died, the Paulus piece would be about looking forward and embracing that which we have in common as Americans, and that is our need for hope and renewal in the face of grief and loss, especially in the face of a significant tragedy from which we're still reeling 10-plus years later.
Sure.
So we had a major event on September 11th, 2011. We invited the Tucson Symphony Orchestra to partner with us, along with UA Presents at the university, and we did the program at Centennial Hall. It was our biggest project that we had produced yet, actually, and made a significant impact on those that were there. The mayor spoke, Ron Barber was there and spoke, Stephen Paulus, the composer. And so this music was able to speak to those, you know, the performers and everyone involved, to the powerful emotions that still are with us after all these years. So then the next part of this was to record that new work of Paulus's, along with other works of his that were previously unrecorded. And so in May of 2013, about 2 years ago, Mr. Paulus was here in Tucson, and we recorded the 9/11 cantata and other works of Paulus's. And then 6 weeks later, if you can believe it, Mr. Paulus had a tragic stroke from which he never recovered, and we lost him this past October. And right about that time, our first choice for a record label informed us that they wanted to pick up this project. Reference Recordings, they're based in San Francisco. They were our top choice for a few reasons, including the fact that they really promote their artists, and they distribute not only nationally but internationally. And so this was really big news and a big step for us to have this powerful music go out in a very broad way. And so that is set to release, that album, on September 11th, fittingly so, this year, 2015. And in the meantime, we'd been invited to perform a concert in New York City at Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center, a solo concert of our musicians featuring this very same music. And so, Dan, you can't dream this stuff up. I mean, this will be our debut concert as True Concord Voices and Orchestra.
Right.
on a day where we both release our nationally distributed, internationally distributed album in Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center. I
mean, well, and for awesome. A group your size and, as you say, let this sink in. This is absolutely huge. And
it's still sinking in. I still have to pinch myself.
It's a world stage. And how can the rest of us who won't be in New York that day get a hold of this recording?
Well, I had a really great conference call with the folks at Reference Recordings, and they've got big plans in terms of how we're going to roll out this album. You'll be hearing from Mary as well, because Mary's over there, and she's full of great ideas.
She'll be busy.
She'll be busy, and she's got some great ideas as to how we're going to, you know, tell the world about this album, because I'm really proud of this album. The music is incredibly beautiful and powerful. I'm proud of the performance of it. I think it's a tremendous representation of the talent of the art scene right here in Southern Arizona, and I can't wait to share it with folks right here and in New York and, you know, across the world.
What an opportunity, and I know it's going to be great. When we sat down for lunch, we talked about music, and we talked about what I love about what you do is that you take the music to the people. You're down in Green Valley for several dates. You were last season. You are going to be this next season. Give us a brief look at the upcoming 2015-2016 season. And then I want to talk about how do you draw more people into the hall? Wouldn't it be nice to look out and see an audience like in their mid-30s instead of in their mid-60s or 70s?
Well, we're just glad to be able to look across the hall and see it full.
Okay, and, good. And it is.
And it has been. Even in these new venues, we really made a big splash. And as I said at the top of the of our time together, we love Green Valley. They have just been eating our music up. So we love to go down there. We started with one concert down there back in 2007. Now we're doing all six of our subscription concerts down there.
Right.
It's just been amazing.
And doing well.
Yeah. You know, I've been, the NEA just released, and I should say, I have to make a plug for NEA because they're involved in this New York project. We received a $40,000 grant from them to make this New York concert on September 11th of this year possible. And so we're grateful to NEA, and we're just grateful that it's huge validation from the premier arts agency in the United States. Validation of the project, but also of our artistic quality. But the NEA released a report recently about, you know, why do people attend the arts? And what are some of the things that hold people back from attending? And it's interesting because it mirrors a study that we did ourselves a few years ago, in that one of the big barriers for people is access, proximity of concerts to their homes. So it was fascinating for us to discover this, you know, on our own in our own study, and then read about it in the NEA later, mm-hmm. In their study. So that's why we expanded the number of concerts and venues in more places around the community, including around Green Valley, so we can be more accessible. Now, about the diversity of age, we've been reaching more people, more young people, primarily because just with our concerts, we've been going to them with our music. We have a high school master class program in which our vocal artists go to various local schools and work with those students. They perform for them, and they encourage them. They demonstrate to them that music is important. It's a viable career. It's something that for whom, you know, this passion burns in their hearts, they should really pursue it. So as a result, we've seen more young people come to our concerts. Of course, people have been saying that that it's been all old people coming to classical music for, you know, the last 50 years. And for the most part, that's true, because these same studies that NEA has put out has said that, you know, people who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are so busy, you know, working on their careers and raising their families that they don't have the disposable time, let alone the income, to come attend a concert. But if they have a robust experience with the arts and music in their school age years, like we and many other arts organizations, most especially the Tucson Symphony Orchestra here locally, then they come back when they're in their 50s and 60s and later. So I think we're planting the seed in many young people in hopes that cycle will just continue to perpetuate going forward. for decades to come.
So, Mary, we've determined classical music is not dying, but from a marketing standpoint, how do you get more young people out to these things to have that overwhelming experience that makes them want to come back in a decade?
Well, you know, one of the things we've done is we've engaged more with our artists themselves. Social media, as you know, is huge. Now,
great point.
Now with every demographic. So even the people in their 60s and 70s have hit the internet. And so we have a number of world-class artists that we engage and contract with for our concerts each year, and they have networks around the world in some cases, and they have a strong loyalty and a passion for what TCA has been doing, and so we've actually engaged with them a lot this year. We've done some focus groups with the artists to talk to them about better ways of engagement, and are using them as our ambassadors and our voices. Some of them have even said, you know, I'm on a plane when I leave Tucson and I'm telling people about the concert I've just done. Can we get some business cards so we can hand them out to people and, you know, drive them to our Facebook pages and our web pages so that they can learn more about the organization? And I think with this national recording coming out, it'll give us a, you know, something to kind of hang our hat on that can engage people in Minnesota who, you know, come to our concerts 6 months out of the year and who can then carry that. But we're really working with building our ambassadorship with our artists, and I think that's going to go a long way. And as Eric talked about, you know, the high school master classes, the artists have said, we're here for a week, you know, we rehearse, we have a lot of time, let us go to schools. So they're very much a part of this strategy to get involved more.
Okay, Eric, if people want to find out more about the Tucson Chamber Artists, where do they go?
www.tucsonchamberartists.org. And when we do change our name, it will be trueconcord.org, but the Chamber Artists URL will feed right into the new website, which will launch on July 1.
Very good.
July 1, new website.
Okay, I want to thank my guests, Eric Holton, music director of Tucson Chamber Artists, and Mary Davis. I'll be back here filling in for Bill on Friday. And I just want to remind you that the Buckmaster Show is made possible in part by the generous support of Perfection Auto Works. Mike Emery and his team can take care of all your foreign and domestic automobile needs, and Mike offers a free 26-point inspection. Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at kvoi.com.